originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Barrage aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from Saratoga Springs, New York, right here in the Jock's Room kitchen. And I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, a native of Venezuela, he was the regular rider for Moreno, Mohamen, Celestine, Harmonize, just to name a few. He was the leading rider at Arlington Park in 2009. He later found success in New York, and he won his 1,000th race right here at Saratoga in 2014. With 1,431 wins and over $73 million in earnings, it's a pleasure to introduce Jockey Junior Alvarado. Junior, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Christina. Thanks, Michelle, you know, for giving me the opportunity to be here on your show. And, you know, very happy to be here.
Can't wait to hear your story, Junior. As I mentioned in the introduction, you're from Venezuela.
Yes, I am.
And your father, I read, was actually a very successful jockey there.
Yeah, you know, he was a jockey too, you know, and get the chance to, you know, see him riding when he was riding there in Venezuela, you know. Then, you know, he got a bad injury where he couldn't keep riding anymore, but, you know, that didn't keep me, you know, to follow his steps.
So that didn't scare you away?
No, it did not.
And tell us what it was like for you growing up in Venezuela and around the racetrack.
Well, you know, at the beginning, you know, we moved. You know, after my dad had the injury, you know, we moved to another city there that's no track around at all, you know. Then, you know, I always, like I said, I always wanted to be a jockey, you know, and let my dad and my mom know that that's what I wanted to be, you know. They weren't very happy about it, you know. They make me finish high school first for them to give me, like, it was like a paper that we need to go to the track that they allow me, and that give me the rights for me to go to the track. So at in high school, then, you know, I went to the track, you know, wasn't easy at all, you know. In Venezuela, you know, we're like way behind there, and like I say, it wasn't easy, but, you know, we made it through.
Did you grow up with any brothers or sisters?
I grew up with my sister. I have an older brother, you know, but he's my older brother by my dad's side, you know. We always were in contact, you know. We get more like together as I was getting older. And, you know, we're very close right now, we all three.
Do they have anything to do with the racetrack?
My brother, he tries. He tried once to be a jockey, but he couldn't keep up his way. Mm. You know, he's not that tall. You know, he's probably my size, but he definitely a little more wider than me.
So you mentioned your parents made you finish high school before you went to the racetrack. Do you think that's a good idea to get your education before you ride?
Definitely. I'm very happy, you know, that they did. You know, even though, like I say, probably mid-high school, I wanted to quit and go start riding right away. You know, I'm very glad that they keep pushing me until at least I finish high school. And like I said, I always will be, you know, grateful for that.
Were you good at school?
I was not. Like I said, I mean, at that point, like the last probably couple of years, you know, just made it, just through it, you know, enough just to pass.
Right. I get it. Did you participate in sports? Were you always an athletic kid growing up?
Yeah, I always played soccer, played baseball, you know. I was good at it at that time. But like I said, you know, when everybody start, you know, turning 14, 15, 16, everybody start growing up, and I'm staying the same height, so that didn't work for me after that.
What worked out well for you with your chosen profession? Now, how old were you when you sat on your first racehorse?
I was probably 18. That's when I started, you know, riding, probably ride my first horse and a normal race, you know. And then I took a break because I did road, and I knew I wasn't ready at all. It wasn't even close, you know. I thought I was ready. You know, you start galloping and you know, you think you're ready. But, you know, when I got to the gate and I leave the gate and I finish the race, I knew I wasn't not even close to be ready. So I took my time again and keep, you know, like working for like probably a year and a half until I went back again and got my license again to start riding.
So obviously this is after your parents made you finish high school, and that's when you were allowed to go to the racetrack. And how long was it? Did you spend a lot of time in the barn working around horses before you actually sat on a horse's back, or how did that work?
Yeah, we, you know, in Venezuela, it's pretty hard, you know, like they want you to, before you get to the track, you need to know how to gallop, but there is really nowhere else where you will learn how to gallop horses, you know. There is not many farms there, and if you go to a farm, the babies are not the same like here, you know. The farm, they teach the baby, you know, you can get on babies, and, you know, they're like, they're very crazy. You don't want to go there. So what I did was, like, you know, pretty much was just walking horses from the barn to the track. And when I, you know, I get the jockey who's going to gallop the horse to get on, and then, you know, bring the horse back after he exercises on the track. That's what I did pretty much almost for like 6 months, you know. Once in a while, you know, if I knew the trainer wasn't there, I probably would have jogged the horse, you know, back to the barn, maybe a little easy gallop if I knew it wasn't tough. And yeah, it took me probably like 6-7 months like that for me to get like for they to allow me to get in the track, you know. And then, you know, after that, you know, when I got to the track, it was probably like 3 months where I only could just jog horses. I wasn't, you know, able to, they didn't let me gallop any horses or race, nothing like that. Just stay with jogging horses, that's it.
And was it, I've heard that certain countries, they don't use saddles. Did they use saddles in Venezuela?
Oh, no, not at all. And it is very painful. Actually, like, I don't know why it comes to like, 2 weeks ago, I was talking with one of those pony riders there, and we're just talking how painful it is when you have to ride with no saddle like that, and you start galloping, and you get blisters everywhere, and it's just not fun.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
Well, I guess you would probably get a good workout. It works your legs, and you have to, you know, learn good balance anyway.
Yeah, you have to have a very good balance, because that's one thing, you know, when you ride with saddle here, then in Venezuela without saddle, you have to have a very good balance. Like, you know, if you lose a little, like, you have to be, like, you know, very focused what you're doing, because all of a sudden, like, you will start going sideways, and you could definitely fall, but, yeah.
Did that happen to you in the beginning?
It did. A couple times, I like I said, just starting, you know, got too excited, and then I'm kind of, like, looking around, and all of a sudden, I felt myself, like, going sideways, and there I go. When the horse felt you going sideways, they knew, and they just take off, and then they leave me on the ground.
Oh, gosh. We've all been there, I suppose, Junior, but so you're starting out, and who's the trainer? Who's kind of your mentor at this time? Who's teaching you the ropes?
You know, in Venezuela, it's, like I said, it's so different than here. You know, in Venezuela, when I start like that, you know, you use, the trainers, they bring the horse by the track, and then jockeys come, and, you know, let's see, like a 10, 6, 7, 8 jockeys come, and accelerator come, and, you know, the trainer will decide, oh, you get in this horse, they bring, like, probably between 10 and 15 horses each trainer, you know, and that's what you do. They will let you work some horse, gallop some horses sometime and now, but, you know, we do it there for free. So we have to gallop horses for free in Venezuela. Jockeys, you have to do it every day. That's the only way you can keep, you know, your door open to get mounts in the afternoon for the weekend. And that's what I did. You know, you just try to keep going training, you know. At the beginning, before I started, you know, riding horses, you know what I did, to just try to offer myself, like, listen, I jog any horse you want me to jog, because at that point, you know, jockeys and XSR riders, they don't want to really jog horses. You know, they just want to go and gallop them and breeze them if they have to. And, you know, I just try to offer myself for the little things that they don't want it to do. So just to have a, you know, to put my foot in the door there. And that's what I did. You know, there was a lot of trainers that did help me at the beginning, you know, give me more chance than others. And, you know, like I say, it was a long process, but little by little, thank God we made it here.
So it sounds totally different. Obviously, here, a jockey or an exercise rider will be at the barn, and you're hustling the barn, or you're, you know, a salary rider at the barn. But it sounds like in Venezuela, you're just waiting there at the racetrack.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. That's, I mean, when I got the chance to come here, to came here to the United States, I mean, it was a whole different game for me. I was very clueless. I have no idea. I remember the first two horses I got on, I run off the wrong way because they tried to pull a little bit, and I put my feet out of the stirrups because I don't have at that point I didn't have control with the saddle. It was a disaster. But yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's a little different, you know. That's what I say. I think we're a little still way behind there. But, you know, like, I learned a lot from that. And, you know, sometimes I got crazy horses that I need my feet out of the stirrup, and it does help that I learned to handle horses without a saddle.
Jockey Junior Alvarado joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Junior, when were you ready to start riding? When had you made that decision, anyway, that you were going to start riding races?
Well, like I said, as soon as I finished high school, I went to the track. Mm-hmm. I was committed. You know, it was a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, a couple times I actually went back home for probably a few weeks, kind of disappointed. Then in 2005, I started riding. Back again, you know, 2000, probably 2004, that's when I rode my first race, and I knew I wasn't ready. Then I went back, started riding again, and the first year, probably I rode only 12 horses, maybe. Never hit the board at all. Then the year ended, and, you know, went home for New Year's, and I was very disappointed. I remember I was just thinking, like, I'm going to start the new year, like, should I go? Should I start doing something different? Should I go back to school, do something? Then, you know, like, I got my brother, who was my biggest support at that point. And say, you cannot give up. Just keep trying. This is not going to be easy. It hasn't been easy for anyone here, you know, but, like, you have to do it. You have to do it. You have to keep going. He tried to help me with some trainers that he knew when he was trying to be a jockey, and what he did was, like, he kind of told me, like, you cannot go to Valencia. That's where I started to riding in Valencia. So you have to go to Caracas. And I told him, this is harder there. How come, I mean, I didn't get any chance in Valencia? That's not possible. He said, it'll be different. It'll be different, but you have to try. It's like, you already, like, kind of burning Valencia. They know you. They're going to use you to gallop, but they're not going to. He says, like, that he knew a couple trainers there that might probably help me. At the time, you know, they use probably something. They're going to say that just to get rid of you, but, you know, I give it a chance. And then I went to Caracas. You know, I started galloping for a very good trainer at that time. You know, he was the leading trainer. And it took me probably, like, 4 or 5 months until he put me in my first horse to ride it. But, you know, I get the win right away with him. Then, you know, things start going, you know, a little better in 2005. You know, at the end of the year, I got probably like 3 wins. And, you know, by 2006, definitely that's when I picked it up and started doing pretty good.
So obviously here in the States, when a jockey wins their first race, they have that celebration. They get buckets of water and they get all kinds of things thrown at them. Do they do that in Venezuela?
Yeah, they do it too. They do it too. They don't throw water there. They'll wait until you go to the junction and they get the garbage can and they throw it at you. Like I say, we're way behind there.
So do you remember your first race? Do you remember how it played out?
Yeah. You know, it was very funny. I finished second. And the horse that won the race got the cue. I got put up to the first place. And I said I will never forget it because first it was my first race. And second, because my dad, he won his first race ever, and he got the cue. me, it was like the other way around. I finished second, and the horse that won got DQ, and I got put up. So it was just a little, you know, it was, you know, funny. I never knew that until my dad told me right after I won the race. So
I'd rather be in your shoes, I think.
Yeah, he said, like, you know what, you're probably, like, going to have more luck than me in the business. So.
Now, tell us, how did it work out where you eventually came to the States?
You know, like, my brother, you know, he got a chance. You know, he got a year visa to come here to the United States. So he was here while I was riding in Venezuela. I was doing pretty good. Then he was the one that pretty much pushed me and bring me here. You know, he said, like, you have to come here. You know, you're doing good there, but things aren't easy there. You know, you have to sometimes, you know, work out with trainers and do stuff that you don't want it to do there. And he said, like, you know, like, you don't want to go on that path because, you know, it's just too hard. He said, like, there is more opportunity here. There's more tracks right here. And like I said, I'm glad I listened to him. And you know, I got the chance to came here to the United States, and I took the chance.
Where did you end up? Where was your first racetrack?
It was Gulfstream. I remember I got here, probably it was like February 20, and the 27, I rode my first race in Gulfstream Park. I was still a bag boy. I have probably like maybe 2-3 months with my bag. You know, it wasn't much, but a little bit to work. But I did pretty good. I won like 7 races for the rest of the mid in Gulfstream Park, like not knowing any English at all.
Wow.
Being new and, you know, learning the system, you know, I thought it was pretty good. Then, you know, after that Calder, and, you know, I did pretty well in Calder too.
So that had to be tough for you, kind of a culture shock. You didn't speak English. You're getting used to the way things are run here. So tell us, we talked about the morning work. How is, you know, actually riding in a race different here versus Venezuela? Is it rougher riding back home or?
You know, it's funny. I got to here, you know, and start riding here, and I was very excited, you know. I got in the dirt, you know. I thought it was pretty similar, maybe a little safer here, some ride to ride here. The only thing that I never experienced was to be in the turf. When I have the chance to ride in the turf for the first time, almost freaked out. Then it's the second time, I keep freaking out. Then it's the third time, and I think it's just getting worse for me. I've never been so close to another horse in front of me, clipping hills, another horse next to me, no chance, nowhere to go. And I remember probably after my feet race in the turf, I told my agent, listen, don't put me in any, I don't want to ride in the turf. It's like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to go down. It's like, I don't like this. I don't like that. I hate it. I can do turf. And he's telling me, like, listen, you have to do it. You have to do this. A lot of turf races. You're going to get good. You have to keep doing it. You just have to believe in yourself and all, you know, all this stuff. And, I mean, at that point, I didn't want none of that. I was just like, nope. I don't want to go down. I didn't come here to clip hills and, you know, have an injury here. Like, that's the last thing I want to do. Then he kept doing it. I fired him.
Oh, no.
I got him back for, like, 2 weeks later again. And I told him, like, listen, don't put me in the turf. He's like, I can't. Like, trainers give me a call, and what am I going to tell him? I'm going to tell him, no, when you're just new here, you got to take the chance that they're giving you. Then, you know, I keep trying to work on it. Probably after 3 months, I kind of settle a little bit, you know, and actually that's probably, like, what I love to do the most right now.
What?
You know, if I have to choose between dirt and turf, definitely the turf.
Really?
That's
a great story.
Now, yeah, it's crazy.
Describe to our listeners what the differences are between riding on the dirt and the turf.
Well, no, you have to definitely have a lot of experience. You have to be very, you have to have that kind of, you know, what I learned from was from Ramon. He says you have to have connection with the horse. It's like you don't have much time in the post-party, but somehow you have to try to know what you think he's going to do, the way he feels. Try to get a little connection, then you trust him, but you have to trust yourself too, you know. You have to be in the race and, you know, just make sure you listen to what he wants to do. Never fight him, never go against him, and, you know, they'll know what to do. They're not gonna clip hill and they're not gonna go down. They're pretty smart. And I said that's one thing that definitely is still in my mind and always works for me. It's totally different than being the dirt. You know, you have to be more together, you know. Horses are like more bunched from the first to last, you know, behind one another, clipping hill, and that's what you got to do, because in turf races you have to try to save ground, you have to be behind horses to some horses to relax and have a better finish. So it's definitely way different, the dirt than the turf.
So you're riding in Florida and you're getting used to riding on the grass. And tell us where you went from there. Is that, did you go to Chicago after Florida?
You know, it was Florida first, Gulfstream, then I went to Calder. I rode Calder the whole year. I did pretty good. Then Gulfstream comes again, riding in Gulfstream again. Now I'm riding as a professional. It was a little tough. I think I did pretty good still. Then when we finished Gulfstream, comes Calder again, and it was very hard. I don't know why, it was hard for me to pick up horses to ride. You know, I was riding probably 2-3 horses a week. Then I got Jose Rivera Jr., I remember. He says, I got a guy in Chicago, if you want to go there. He's asking me for you if you wanted to go there. His name is Oscar Sanchez, the agent. So he said, like, you can check it out. You know, I was still new. I didn't know how to, what he means by check that out. I mean, I don't know. I said, like, yeah, I'll go. Then, you know, like, he gave me the number. I talked to Oscar, I remember, and that was right away. Probably 2 days later, I was in the car packed, and I moved to Chicago. Didn't think twice, and I think that was the best move I ever made, you know, since I came here, because, I mean, after that, my business just picked up right away.
When you mentioned, Junior, losing the bug, and most jockeys find that that's really the most difficult moment in their career, is to prove yourself that you can ride without that weight advantage. And so, do you think that really matters?
You know, I don't think that really matters. You know, I think by the time you're losing your bug, you know, you have, you know, you should be able to be pretty good, you know, as a professional. But still, you know, there's some trainer in their mind, you know, they think you have to still prove more than that, you know. I will say, at that point, it's not that you know everything. I don't think you will never know everything in this business. You know, there's a long process that almost every day you get to learn something. But, yeah, I mean, it is very hard. I remember when I rode my last horse with the buck, and then next week, didn't win a race, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. And it was a month, but it actually felt to me like it was probably like a year and a half. It was long. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I wasn't, then, like I said, I wasn't getting the opportunities, and I was like, I mean, I cannot prove anything with what I'm writing right now, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's a process that you have to go through, I guess, you know. You have to keep pushing, and you have to show that you definitely can write, and then you're able to do it as a professional too.
But when you moved to Chicago, that's when you found those opportunities.
Yeah, that's when I got a big opportunity. I went to Chicago, and I got a few barns that were backing me up. You know, they were good friends with my agent, Oscar Sanchez, at that time. And, yeah, they helped me a lot. I remember I have Moises Janes. I got Wayne Catalano, too, at that point. They were helping me a lot. They were giving me good chances. And I mean, it was... It is more easy when you ride fast horses. That's what it is.
That's exactly right, Junior. And what was the difference? Did you notice anything different when you moved to Chicago? Did you notice how were the riders in the room? Did they accept you, or was it tougher there?
No, I don't think it was tougher, you know. Like I say, when you get to ride the right horses, you know, it's a lot easier. But yeah, you know, you get at the beginning, it's like probably like everywhere, you know, jockeys a little bit like, you know, they hesitate because, I don't know, the whole thing, you're taking, you know, their business and all the stuff like that. But definitely, you know, I'll have to call probably Chicago. That's the place that I can call home here in the United States. I love it there. You know, I make great friends there. I have great, like, I mean, I just love Chicago. I love the town there. If I have to go back, that's the place that I will go back anytime. Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. You know, I like I said, I mean, as soon as I got there, you know, it was a lot of help from a lot of people. They support me right away.
Well, in 2009, you were a leading rider at Arlington Park, so obviously you built your business up and you found that success.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, I have to say, you know, like a, it was a bad year for, you know, the accident that René Douglas has, and I have to say probably after that, you know, I pick up a lot of business after him that helped me, you know, to get there, to be the leading jockey the next year.
Jockey Junior Alvarado joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, Junior, you've had some injuries, most specifically your shoulder. You've had a lot of struggles with that. And tell us what that was like and what you went through.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy with my shoulders. It's a problem, you know, a spill I took in Venezuela 1 year. I was a bad boy. It was my fault. I don't want to blame anyone else. But went down, my two shoulders come out. One went back right after I'm sitting up in the ground. Then I goes to first A. They put my old shoulder back in place. Then I go to a doctor. They say, oh, you're fine. You just need 15 days. They didn't do any checkups. It's like, that's normal. You know, they'll go back in place. You know, you probably right now have, you know, like terror issue there, whatever they say at that time. I can't even remember. All that they say was I didn't need any surgery, nothing like that, so I leave it alone. But then, you know, when I got here to United States, riding more horses, working more horses, start feeling, you know, a little uncomfortable. 2007, last week of golf training, I remember that was when I was riding a horse and the 316 pole, I put my whip in the left handed and my shoulder just come out in the 316 pole. Then I ended up in a stir, but I couldn't do anything. I mean, after the wire, I couldn't even pull up the horse. I'm screaming in pain. I'm screaming at the outriders so they can help me to pull the horse. Coming back to the junction and, you know, go first A, try to fix that. Then they say right away, no, you need to get, you know, when I go to the doctor, they say, you need to have surgery. I have one surgery there. 2 years later, I have surgery in my right shoulder. 3 years later, I have another surgery in my left shoulder. So then, yeah, it just was one after the other one. Then my ankle. Then I broke my back. I mean, it's just been a little tough on me, the injuries. But, you know, that's part of the job. I knew, you know, coming into this, that, you know, that's one of those things that you will never be prepared, but you know there is out there.
We'll continue our visit with Jockey Junior Alvarado after this short commercial break. Folks, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanently Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Pena of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
And Moreno's trying to do it all the way on the lead. It's my lucky day to the attack on the inside. Now he switches outside as Moreno angles in, and Palace Malice is toiling. He's struggling today. Will take charges coming with a final run on the outside. Prayer for relief down toward the rail. 100 yards from home, and it's Moreno. Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score. At the end, the margin was a bit more than a length. This my lucky day was second. Will take charge was third, and prayer for relief was fourth. Final time. 148 flat.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Junior Alvarado. Junior, we just listened to the replay of your victory aboard Moreno in the 2014 Whitney. And tell us what you're thinking. What does that bring back? What kind of memories?
Get excited, definitely. You know, those are the kind of races you're looking for every year, you know. Those are the kind of horses you want to ride, to be, you know, participating in those big races, in the big Grade 1 races. And, yeah, that's a race I'll never forget. It was my first Grade 1 victory here. And, I mean, it wasn't my Grade 1, like, here in Saratoga, you know, but it was, like, probably the biggest that I ever had here in Saratoga. And, you know, and we'll never forget that one. It was very, very, very exciting.
I was just looking up to see what he paid that day. $22.
Yes,
that was pretty impressive. Yeah. I actually just saw Eric Guillo out at the Oklahoma track yesterday morning. And tell us how you got the mount on Moreno, and what was he like to ride?
You know, I know my agent was working on it before the Whitney. It was a race, I can't remember the name of the race, in Belmont. Was kind of like the prep for the Whitney, and you know, he was trying to get me here and there. You know, it was a little back and forth. I ended up riding the horse and at Belmont, finished second. Then we were working on the horse for the Whitney. We thought he was working very good, you know, but it was at that point this horse, the top pleasure has was Malibu, I can't remember, a good one. And I mean, we just working on it, and he said to me, like, there's only one way we're going to do this. You go to the lead, and that's it. If you want to go slow, you want to go fast, doesn't matter, but you have to be in the lead. I want to see you in the lead. I don't want to see you half a lane in front. I want to see you two lanes in front. That's why I remember Eric telling me something. Like, all right, that's done deal. And I remember, the post parade, you know, I just put one gaggle. I told my valet one gaggle. He's like, what do you mean one gaggle? I was like, yeah, put me one gaggle. So they know when I'm behind the gate that I'm going to the lead no matter what. I was like, okay, how about if the horse breaks slow? I will send him to the lead no matter what. I was like, break slow, I go around, and I'm going to end up in the lead. Don't worry. So that's what I remember I did. You know, I only put one gaggle at that point, and you know, we went to the lead. And it worked out for us that day.
It definitely did. It's brave. One goggle, I like that.
yeah, like I say, it worked out that day.
Well, obviously he had speed, but what kind of a horse was he like to ride? Was he push button? Was he difficult to rate? Or?
Yeah, you know, he wasn't easy, you know. He was a horse that he didn't like to have horse outside, you know. If he felt kind of pressure or horse outside, he would kind of pinch his ear back, and you can feel that he just don't enjoy what he was doing. You know, he started getting a little cranky. He wants to kind of log in a little bit and kind of like, you know, back up on you, you know, because it happened once to me that I said, okay, you know, I'm gonna try to slow down things, you know. And when I tried to slow down in the race, you know, I got a horse that got next to me on the outside by the half of my pole, and he pretty much quit on me. He did not want that. Then, you know, like I said, we work in the morning a couple times with him and to see if he will learn how to be next to a horse without really quitting. And I mean, he just never, you know, he just did not want a horse next to him at all. So that's, like I said, I mean, the couple times that I got to ride it, you know, what I did, just like put him in front and try to be one lane and a half, maybe two lanes in front, not let nobody get near him. And that's the way he would fight, you know. That's the only way that when you turn for home and you ask him, he will give you what he has, you know. But if he has a horse next to him at that point, he just wouldn't care. He wouldn't give it to you anything.
He didn't like it. Yeah. And you knew him, so that's the benefit of getting to know a horse and riding him prior to the Whitney, obviously, is because you get to know his quirks and what he likes and what he doesn't like. Junior, tell us, obviously, that was here at Saratoga. Before the break, we were talking about your career in Chicago, so tell us how you ended up from Chicago to Saratoga.
You know, I remember I was riding in Chicago, and I was doing good there. One day, I remember Larry Trevelli putting me on a horse in a Monday here in Saratoga. That was probably 2009. Then I came here. I rode a horse. It was favorite in the turf. I rode it pretty horrible, I have to be honest. It was bad. I should have won that race. I ended up finished third. And I guess I judge myself a lot of time. You know, I like to, you know, I'm very, try to learn every day, like I said. And I said at that point, I was thinking actually to come to New York. And I'm saying, like, oh, no, I'm not ready. Those guys will eat me alive there. I'm saying, like, I cannot go to New York yet. I have to stay here in Chicago and, you know, keep learning more and more. And that's what I did. You know, I stayed in Chicago a little longer. Then I think it was 2011 when I decided to go to Aqueduct in the winter. That was my first step. I said, I go to the winter there, Aqueduct. What might be a little easier. You know, it will be less jockeys there. And that's what I did. I went to Aqueduct first. Then by the summer, I went back to Chicago. Did pretty good there again. Then I came back again the next winter to Aqueduct again. And that's when I got my agent, Mike Salito. And after that, you know, I was thinking to go back again to Chicago. But he said, like, you need to stay here. So if you go back, I'm not going to take your book. And you're not going to do it. You have to stay here. And you have to push through it now. Like, you're riding already in Aqueduct. You're winning races here. You're riding for big trainers. Now you have to stay here. When the guys come back, they will probably take you off some horses. You want to still ride some other horses, and you got to prove them that you can ride with this guy here. Like, there is no for you more chance to go back to Arlington unless you want to stay there forever. Then, you know, I'm that year when he says that to me, I'll say, okay, well, let's go. If you think we're ready and you're ready, we'll do it. And I think it was 2012 when I definitely moved my tack to New York and start riding all year round here.
Winters at Aqueduct. I've ridden at Aqueduct a couple times, Junior, and it's pretty cold. I didn't enjoy it very much.
Yeah, no, it's not easy. You know, the first year, you know, I thought it was cold, you know. Then, this is not bad. Second year, yeah, maybe a little more cold this year, but not bad. The third year, it's getting colder. Then the fourth year, oh, man, it's cold in the winter. I don't know how those guys do it. But, you know, I guess, you know, last year, you know, I did pretty good. You know, I was winning a lot of races. So I guess when you're winning a lot of races, you know, that helped to go through that time, you know, the cold time. You know, it just seems like it goes by so fast when you're doing good. If you're doing not so good, definitely it's a struggle for you.
Winning keeps you a bit warmer.
Definitely. I have to agree with that.
And then when you stayed, did you immediately find success when those guys come back from the south, from Gulfstream? The big jock, so to speak, came up back to New York. Did you find it was tough?
Yeah, it got tough, definitely. It was a little more tougher than, you know, just riding in Aqueduct. But, you know, I have to say, you know, Billy Mott was one of those trainers that support me. And, you know, kept me riding, you know, horses when, you know, some other trainer went back to Javier, to Johnny, to Joel. And, you know, like, just riding for a big outfit like Billy Mott, you know, then it helps again for other trainers to give you another chance again. And you know, that's something that I always will appreciate from Billy Mott, that he always been very supportive through my whole career with the injuries and all the stuff. You know, he always been very supportive with me and my agent.
Speaking of Bill Mott, I'd like to talk about a particular horse you used to ride flat out. Bill Mott trained, of course, and you won the Suburban, you won the Cigar Mile. He was a pretty nice horse. Tell us about Flat Out and what was he like to ride?
Yeah, and he was a pretty neat horse, very beautiful-looking horse. Got the chance to ride him probably like maybe four times. I don't think I got too many chances to ride him, but, you know, it was always lovely to ride him. You know, a horse that liked to come a little from off the pace, you know, but when when you knew by the triple, when you start picking it up, you knew when he was going to win. You feel how the power when he started, like, picking it up horses, you know. I get goosebumps right now just thinking about it. Just remember him, how powerful finisher he was when he was in his A game.
Who's your favorite horse? Harmonize, Celestine. I mean, there's so many good names out there. I mean, you know, most recently, Enticed. You rode Enticed to victory in the Gotham, and as well as the Jockey Club Stakes. So, who's your favorite horse?
That's hard. I got a lot of all the horses that you just named. You know, they have you know, a little special part in me, and you know, like through my career, you know, I it's just too hard to name exactly one, because like I said, they all of them have a little bit built something in me, you know, and they have helping me, you know, with everything that I had right now. But probably, you know, if I have to mention one, it will be maybe Mohamed. Yes.
It's funny you mentioned Mohamed, because that was going to be my next topic, your first Derby mount.
Yes, that was my first horse in the Kentucky Derby. It was a great experience. We didn't win, but, you know, we finished 4. I thought it was a great 4. And yeah, I mean, it was an unbelievable experience. I will never forget, and like I said, I always will have it with me. I can. There is no way you forget those. Your first Kentucky Derby.
And it was great, because I read an interview with Kier McLaughlin, and how, you know, a lot of people were questioning him on if he should keep you on the horse, because you'd never ridden in the Derby before. But they were loyal, and they stuck with you, and they gave you that experience, of course. And what was it like when you entered the track, go through the tunnel, and you hear that my old Kentucky home?
Yeah, I mean, it freaks you out. I mean, you get very nervous. You know, you think you relax before. I remember walking out first before you get on the horse, you know, and I'm like, I think I'm all right. You know, I'm good. But, I mean, as soon as you get the leg up and you start hearing the song and the crowd and you're going through the tunnel, man, you easily can get freaked out there. Like, it is just crazy how, like, you know, like, the whole thing gets to you, you know, and then you start overthinking. Then, like, I remember I'm getting nervous, and I'm like, oh man, like, how about if I messed up now? Like, there's things going through your head, you know. But, like, you know, as you know, after you live the game, you forget everything. You're in the race, and you know, you're there to do what to do, you know.
And what's it like riding in a race with 20 other horses? I can't imagine all the chaos that has to be going on.
Yeah, it's a little crazy. You know, it's too many horses. I said, like, oh, too many horses. And I remember me being saying, like, probably I'm going to be, like, in 4th, 5th, you know. And then I broke the gate, and I tried to send him. He didn't want to go at the beginning. I was like, man, I'm, like, probably, like, 14th, 15th, you know, coming to the first turn. I'm like, oh, I'm too far back here. But like I said, I didn't panic, you know. At that time when you leave the gate, you know, you kind of mentally ready to do what you know what to do, you know. And, you know, we were a great trip that day, I remember. We finished 4. But, yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Was like, there's too many horses going, dugging in, going out, going inside. Try to go between horses, you know. Try not to get, you know, in nobody's way, and try to, you know, avoid, you know, having get bumped or get stopped with too many horses, you know. It is great. It is experience that, you know, you only will experience in the Derby, I guess, because not all the race you will have 20 horses.
How many goggles did you wear?
That year I wore probably, like, I think it was 5 goggles. 5 goggles, yeah.
How about this past year with Enticed?
3.
3?
3.
Really?
It was crazy, because my valet here ran, so he put now, like, the plastic when it's raining, and for some reason, if you put it very tight, the dirt doesn't stick to it, and you can go almost the whole race without taking the plastic off. And if you do it, you still have the goggles behind. And I mean, I went the whole Derby without taking my plastic off, and I thought it was awesome. You know, it is, you know, a little trick there, and, you know, it's been working for me pretty good. I save more goggles too.
Right?
Yes.
They can get expensive after a time. Well, good trick to know. Jockey Junior Alvarado joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Junior, we were talking during the break about your family. Tell us about your wife and your kids.
Met my wife in Chicago. Remember being riding horses for my brother-in-law. He took her one time to the track. They thought, you know, I was riding a winner that day. We didn't win. I remember we finished second, you know, but that's how I met her. And, you know, after that, you know, we've been together since then. And, you know, we have two beautiful kids, Adrian and Adeline. Adrian 7, Adeline 3. And, I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine my life without them right now. It's just crazy. It won't make no sense. So I'm very happy, you know, to have them. And they've been very supportive. Like my wife, my kids, they've been, you know, my big rock solid pile there, you know, when I go through hard times with work or even with the injuries, you know, they're the one that pretty much, you know, held me together and, you know, keep pushing me.
I hear your son's allergic to horses.
Yeah. He started probably when he was 3, you know. He was good when he was 1. He used to get in horses when he was 2. And one day to another, I got home, and I just gave him a kiss. And half an hour later, he couldn't breathe. His eyes shut. He has rashes all over his body. At that time, I didn't know it was me. You know, we thought, like, maybe it was something he ate. You know, but then second time again, coming 2 days later from work again, I'm like, we're going to try it the third time to see if it's me. Then I remember a third time coming from work. We'll touch him. Half hour later, boom, he break out bad. So since then, you know, he's still pretty allergic to horses. It's very ironic.
That is ironic. Oh, my gosh. So I guess he's not going to be a jockey.
Well, as of right now, he's not even, you know, he's 7. I don't think he really cares too much about horse racing. You know, he gets excited when I'm riding in the big races, and he wants me to win and all this and all that. But I ask him, you know, you want to ride horses, stuff like that. He doesn't seem like he's not really into it. He doesn't watch races. If he goes to the track, he likes just to play around, not even paying attention to the races. He's very into baseball. That's his main thing right now. And, you know, hopefully that will keep him going for a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you think he might be a future baseball star. Sounds like he's pretty good.
That'll be my kid for retirement.
I love it. How about your daughter? What is she interested in?
Well, she's too little right now. I don't think she likes horses. She likes everything you bring it to. So, I mean, right now I have no idea what she really wanted to do.
How old is she?
She's 3.
Oh, okay. So yeah, she's very young.
Yeah, she's little. You know, you bring it to a horse and she love it. You bring it to a you know, a bunny, a rabbit, whatever, and she love everything. She love animals. That I know for a fact.
What if she comes up to you one day later down the road and says, "Hey, I want to be a jockey"?
I don't want you to be a jockey. That would be my answer forever.
Forever.
Do something else. It's hard. Yeah. It's just too hard, you know. Like, I understand, you know, when I was riding, you know, I still didn't have idea why my dad didn't want me to be a jockey, and my mom never knew why. Doing good, and they still, you know, they were happy that I was doing great. Came here, they were happy and doing good here in the United States. But I can feel they're always like, you know, my dad is very proud. But, you know, they had that, like, I didn't want you to be a jockey. And now that I have my kids, I have a completely understanding why they didn't want me to be a jockey. And that's how I feel. I feel with my kids, you know, I don't want them to be a jockey. It's a risky, risky profession. And it's just too hard, you know. You don't want to be seeing your kids every day. Every time that they get on a horse, you don't know. You know, something goes wrong. You know, there's their life there. And, you know, you don't want that for your kids.
How do you cope with that, going out there, getting a leg up on a horse every race, and you know you can get hurt, obviously. We've talked about that before the break. But how do you deal with that mentally, knowing that, but going out there and still doing your job?
Yeah, definitely. It's in the back of your head, you know. Like, you had your that in mind, knowing that, you know, things can happen, you know, but I guess you move it and you put it just in the back of your head. You know, you go riding and you can not ride with that in front of your head, you know, that, you know, something's going to happen. Then you will never be able to do your job, you know. We just go there and we do it, you know. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen, I guess. You know, there is nothing really you will do to avoid it if it's going to happen to you, you know.
How about the weight? Is that tough for you?
No bad. Not as easy as other jockeys, but not as hard as another jockey. You know, I'll tell me, you know, I'm between 117, 118. You know, if I had to ride 16, 17, sometimes I have to lose a couple pounds, you know, but this is not a struggle for me. Definitely, no. I eat pretty good, you know, and like I say, if I had to lose weight, I will eat and I will go and lose weight. But I will gladly lose weight. After I ate.
After you eat.
Yes.
What do you eat? Do you watch? You have to eat salad? What
is it? No, I have no diet. I ate. You don't want to see me eating. Believe me. I ate. I mean, I'm like, oh. I and everything. I mean, it doesn't matter how that food looks like. I'll eat it.
Sometimes you have to pay for it in the hot box then, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes. But, you know, like, if you think back, you know, you say, it was worth it.
Now, do you have to work out in addition to getting on horses in the morning, or you're at the point your physical fitness is good enough to where you don't have to do that?
Well, I don't think, you know, jockeys will have to work out. You know, this is a pretty, you know, like, tough job. You know, you're pretty physically, you know, you're ready to get on horses. But I like to work out, you know, in addition, you know, the workout we get when we get on the horses, you know. I do like to work out, you know. I do three days, 4 days, probably sometimes work out a day, you know, nothing crazy, but, you know, I don't know, just the way that makes me feel, you know. I like to feel that I'm fit and I'm ready.
What's a day like in the life of Junior Alvarado? Take us through your daily schedule. Do you work hard in the mornings, and, you know, what's it like for you?
Yeah, you know, come in the track in the morning, work out, you know, then work horses, go back home, breakfast. Then, you know, if it's a racing day, you know, I won't have, you know, much time in the morning. So I guess I'll just go back racing, come back home, try to, before dinner, have a little play with the kids, eat dinner, then, you know, play a little more before the kids go to bed, you know. And my day's off, you know. If they don't have school, you know, I'll definitely play all day with them. You know, I go in the backyard, we start, you know, we're playing, and then we go do video games. We go out, I'll take him to Dave and Buster, stuff like that. You know, just to see them happy and, you know, enjoying. That's what I like to do.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned your son and how he's going to be a professional baseball player, and then it's your ticket to, you don't have to ride anymore. But later down the road, many, many years from now, when you do have to retire, what do you plan for your life? What do you think you might do after riding?
Good question. I will probably move to Chicago. I'll probably move to Chicago because I love it, and because my wife, she will drag me there no matter what, if I didn't want to, but I do want it. I don't know, you know, like, always have that thing to open, like, a little restaurant. I will love it just to have something going on, you know. I don't want to retire and just sit and do nothing, you know. When you're a jockey, I guess, you know, you will never be able just to sit and just have retirement bill without doing nothing. You have to do something, you know. So, probably, you know, that's something I had in mind. You know, maybe, I don't know. I got my brother-in-law who has a hockey business. Maybe get involved with him. But definitely, I will do something. I just cannot retire and just sit around
just
the
sit.
House.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to in the immediate future, Junior? Breeders' Cup is coming up at Churchill Downs very soon. So what are you looking forward to? What horses are coming up that you're excited about?
Like babies. At this point, you know, like most of the older horses are taken. So we'll just, my agent and me, you know, try to work in and, you know, getting in some babies, fillies, gold, you know, turf, dirt. Trying to pick up, you know, the new horses coming to see if we can, you know, pick up a good one and, you know, then take him from there.
Do you enjoy getting on babies, getting on these young horses that you're still part of their learning process?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting when you get, you know, to work those horses in the morning because, like I say, like, you're excited, expecting one of them to be, you know, the horse you're going to take you to a Kentucky Derby, to a Breeders' Cup. So it is exciting, you know, when Maya texts me, oh, we have to work this baby today, you know. And it is exciting, even though we know, you know, they can be a little, you know, like, still immature mentally, you know, it's still exciting for me.
Junior, we only have about a minute left. Obviously, you mentioned having fun with your kids, but what else do you do in life that's fun for you when you're not riding?
No, believe me, that's fun for me. That's what I do when I see them happy and play with them. Like, I'm crazy playing with my son. Used to play baseball with him. You know, it just drives me insane just how he is when he's playing baseball and how competitive he gets and that he's good and that he wants to do it. And, I mean, I want to quit sometime and he just want to keep doing it. That I mean, right now that's one of the only things that really makes me happy is to see him, how excited he is about it.
Well, Junior, we are all out of time, I'm afraid. Time flies when you're having fun, but thank you so much for joining us and wishing you all the best.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and you know where to find me. You know, I will gladly do this again.
Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, and of course Express Bet Radio. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Dalla Pina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.